Nukru. Good evening. Manaunu Katamanya Tiluka Unipayuku Katamanya Tangan Nasau Tinga Sri, the Panikatim Rikini, February 25, 2025, 6 months ago. She was a palmy, the Arab Tinta, the Pakanikin.
I'm in conflict for 9B.
Katimji, the premier, the alternative premier of Larry.
And me, Mirawa, I'm declaring a conflict on number 9B.
We're in the making. I'm looking on the popularity. Thank you, Mr. Shepherd.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I too have been in conflict on 90.
We're in the making. That's why I'm going to make that. So when I got to make you take something to turn a 9B. Nasa myself in a 9. And I'm going to switch my language to English. 9A, application for livery license, shuttle bus services in Iqaluit. Steve Allen will be reporting for you. Push that button. Okay, go ahead.
Good evening, Councillor and Councillors and Mayor. My name is Stephen Allen, Chief Enforcement Officer of the City of Iqaluit. I'm here to present the initial application for new livery license for IQ Transit to operate a shuttle bus service in Iqaluit. The need for a shuttle bus service in Iqaluit has been clearly demonstrated through the community feedback. Many residents, especially those with mobility challenges, have expressed interest in a transport solution that improves their access to essential services and activities.
Slow down a little bit. We have interpreter. Thank you. Go ahead.
The application is supported by our department, and we have Jacinto, the company owner, present to answer any questions that you may have of him.
We're going to meet Steve. Question, comment? Councillor Stevenson.
Thank you, Steve, for the introduction to this. I guess my first question would be, well, first I'd like to say that this is really exciting to me. I'm happy that there's the potential of an alternate form of transportation for people to get around. It's obviously necessary. Been in this council chamber for an awfully long time, and every time we talk about the taxi bylaw, and you know, I have to remind people that our taxis act as a public transit system for the most part in the city. So to have something that's an alternative to those, I think, is a really exciting development. My question is probably fairly short, but I'm just wondering what. So what's the next step in the process from this presentation to an actual shuttle service?
Thank you, Councillor Stevenson. Steve?
If approved, the owner, Jacinto, would have to make application for a livery license just like any other taxi company in town. And assuming that all the requirements are met, then he would receive his livery license and be able to operate the shuttle bus.
Thank you. Deputy Mayor Smith.
Steve, for being here. This might be a question more for Jacinto, actually, if he's... thank you. I think this is something that is, as Councillor Stevenson said, exciting and, you know, overdue, certainly. I guess I'm a little... curious. I know there's a lot of stops on here, and I expect that this will be a pretty well utilized service. Could you maybe just tell us how long you expect it to take to do, I guess, one run? Would these all stops would be hit on every single run, and how many times a day would that be happening? Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor Smith. Go ahead.
Hello, thank you very much for having me. To answer your question, so it takes about 45 minutes to run 21 routes from Apex all the way to the airport and then back as well. To answer your question, so we'll be operating from 7 o'clock in the morning into 8 p.m. weekdays, and on Saturdays will be 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. So it's going to be running fairly consistent throughout the day.
Thank you, Justin, too. Deputy Mayor Smith.
Mayor Allen, thank you, Jacinto. This is kind of, I probably maybe not a question for you, maybe for us actually. For these stops, or is the city planning on putting up any signage, like a, you know, that shows that this is a shuttle stop? Are we, if this is approved, is there a plan in place for something like that? I'm not sure if that's one of the Steves, but thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor Smith. Steve.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good evening to everyone. Once we get a bit closer, Jacinto gets a bit closer to launching the service, yes, we'll have to work with him on signage. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Councilor Knoop.
Thank you, Mayor. Almost the same as the Deputy Mayor question. There are a lot of stops I see in this proposal. How many shuttles are you going to have? Do you think you're going to have? Are they more than one?
Thank you, Councilor Knoop.
Go ahead.
So right now we start with one bus, as we don't have enough data to collect. As we launch and things are successful, we're looking to bring another bus in the summertime.
Wait a minute. I think this is application for approval of the license. Any motion? Moved by Deputy Mayor Smith, seconded by Councilor Stevenson. Any question to the motion? Councilor Shepherd?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Is this a motion to approve the application? Or my understanding of what administration said a minute ago is this was kind of a review and then the applicant could approve for a livery license after this. I'm confused what's being asked of us here. There was no request for decision attached to this. Is this an actual application that's bypassing the taxi review committee before coming to council, or is this just information so we can get some feedback so we can encourage the proponent to apply for a livery license in due course?
Thank you, Councilor Stevenson. Steve?
Thank you, Councilor, for the question. The normal process will be yes for it to go through the taxi bylaw committee. Because of the timeline that we've been working with Jacinto on this, that we bypassed that and to bring it directly into council. So the question should have been there on the end, I agree with you, asking for a motion to support. Thank you.
Motion's on the floor. Any question on the motion? Being none, all in favor? Unanimous. Thank you. Moving on to agenda item 9B is deferred. 9C, request for decision development permit application 24-056. This is going to be Matthew. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Mayor Awa, and thank you, Council, for being here. This is a proposed development of a hotel in the Astro Hill. The applicant is Nunastar Properties. A representative from Nunastar Properties is here in the gallery to answer any questions. The proposed development is located closer to where the post office is. The sketch plan showing the exact location of the proposed development is in the attachments for your review. When coming into the Astro Hill complex, once you cross the bridge and you're at the first main intersection, if you would go straight towards the pharmacy entrance, towards the post office, before going around the corner, that would be the at the corner of the Astro Hill complex is the proposed location of the hotel. The area, the Astro Hill area, as we know, includes several different uses, such as residential, a cinema, and various commercial buildings. There's the Inukshuk High School, which is close by, and the Brown Building with GN off, government offices within. So the lot in question, which is called Lot 422 of Plan 617, has two sort of parts. There's the lower part of it, which is in the lower part of Astro Hills complex, and then there's the upper portion of the lot, which is the part that's closer to the post office. So the applicant proposes a six-story hotel with 85 rooms, with amenity space at grade, and some mechanical space in the basement. The hotel would add to the mix of uses at the Astro Hill complex, which does include an existing hotel, the Frobisher Inn, and several other known uses. The developer is proposing good pedestrian connectivity as part of this development, and overall the pedestrian connectivity would improve in the Astro Hill complex. And I'll go through that later when we look at the site plan. What's unique about this development is that it's inset into a hill, into the Astro Hill. So they're taking advantage of a unique opportunity to put the basement floor below grade, and that allows them to get the extra below grade floor. So the height is calculated using the first floor. Therefore, it's being proposed at six stories, but there are effectively seven levels in the building. The building's wedge shape reflects the constraints and opportunities on site. That includes the fact that because it's on the corner of a hill, they've shaped it and oriented it accordingly. When Nunastar Properties were engaged in their long-term planning for the overall master plan of this complex, they did engage a snow and wind expert who proposed certain ways of siting their buildings to be compatible with the snow and wind patterns on the Astro Hill. This proposed building and the way that it is shaped is consistent with those recommendations. The proposed development was reviewed by both Public Works and Engineering departments, and they have requested certain special conditions in conditionally approving and supporting the proposed development, and we have reached that conditional approval by those departments. So I do want to talk about the survey sketch, which is also being proposed as part of this development permit approval. So the survey sketch is a mechanism that we use to approve new parcels or subdivisions. In this case, a subdivision is required. Survey sketch 25002 divides the lot into two parcels. Lot A, which would be the upper lot where the hotel is being proposed, and lot B, which is the lower lot, which is where the existing buildings of this lot, buildings 358 and 359, currently exist. Lot A would include the hotel and rely on access from the Astro Hill Road, the upper portion. Lot B would continue to be accessed from Pologa Drive. So the division just simply follows the existing topographic and just importantly, the functional separation of the two areas. So they are separate topographically, so one is higher than the other, and they're both accessed from different roads. So that's what the survey sketch is achieving. The developer's transportation engineer had completed a traffic impact study at the request of the Planning and Development Committee in a prior development permit application. And that was studied, they studied the whole site comprehensively, and as well with the previously approved lookout development, which is quite near this one. The traffic engineers did conclude that the proposed hotel would generate a minimal increase in traffic with respect to the full master plan, and an estimated 20 additional vehicle trips during peak hours. So that basically means that the major intersections within the Astro Hill complex, the report concluded, would not be overburdened by the introduction of both lookout and the hotel. So they signed off on a report that said, by adding both of these buildings, these intersections will continue to perform at what we call a level of service of A, which is what they're currently performing at. One concern of council of committee in the past was with the singular entrance into the Astro Hill through a bridge and the implications of a singular access during emergency situations. As part of this development permit, we have provided, have worked with Nunastar to create an alternative access in emergency situations, which would be through kind of where the CBC building is and up that drive aisle that goes towards building 357. That there would be a gate installed, and Public Works would hold the key to that gate for emergency situations or for snow removal situations if needed. So that we try to address that using a public-private partnership in the best way possible. As part of this development permit, we are also requesting a variance from City Council. The proposed subdivision of Lot 422 would require a variance. That is because the subdivision of the lot would create a non-conforming setback, which means by adjusting the lot line, buildings 358 and 359 would be too close to the back of the lot. Staff find it to be generally supportable in this particular situation where the grades, so where the lot line is also, because we look at setbacks from a 2D perspective, but when you're actually on site, there's a significant hill. The spatial separation or the vertical separation creates some visual barrier to the normal privacy concerns we would experience with a rear yard setback reduction. So in other words, the buildings would normally be too close if everything was flat, but in this case, since there's some differences in the elevations, there's some good separation between the two lots and the buildings that are on them. So we do understand that with a setback variance and with buildings that are built close together, the chief building official would review that and ensure that it meets fire safety regulations under the building code. So that would they would still be subject to that review. So we do not typically, we would support the outcomes of the building official's recommendation. So if the building inspector says, hey, those buildings are too close, they would come back to planning and we would come back to council with the new program. We see some benefits to this project. By using a hillside design, it can get more development into the quarry area in a strategic way. And it densifies in areas that are already walkable. However, the project does have a couple of challenges that staff have identified. The first is that this is being proposed midway through our redesign of the water and sewer infrastructure in the Astro Hill. So that's a capital project that's well underway, and the city's engineering team has been working diligently to come to an agreed upon design. We have been in close contact with Nunastar Properties throughout that process. We meet frequently, and we just met on Monday again. That is reflected in the condition. So Noonstar will be required to pay for the costs of reconnecting to the new infrastructure once the city has completed that capital project. And that will be fully at the responsibility of that developer, but will be approvable by the Director of Engineering. So it'll come back to the city once we've completed the new design, then they can reconnect to the new water and sewer pipes. And as mentioned, typically we wouldn't entertain a rear yard setback of 6 meters, or setback variance of 6 meters, but in this case, because of the elevation difference, it's supportable from a visual and privacy standpoint. One accessible parking stall is proposed to meet the zoning bylaw requirement, and the building does include accessibility features such as a ramp and an elevator, and elevator access. And we're also supportive of the various pedestrian improvements. So I'll just go through some of the drawings and then talk about the implications, the policy implications. So attachment one, which is the survey sketch plan itself, I'll just explain this quickly. Yeah, so, okay. And so if we're looking at the same map, there should be a blue lot. That blue lot is the new lot that we're calling lot A that is created from this survey sketch plan SK25002. And then the remainder lot would be where buildings 358 and 359 currently are. So that's lot B. Finally, to provide continued legal access to the hotel, there would be an easement surveyed because the current access is private. So that is shown in red. It looks like a road connecting to the lot A. So those are the three outcomes of this survey sketch plan. And the special conditions are consistent. So this is on the next page in the attachments. The special conditions are consistent with what is normally approved in the Astro Hill. There are things like easement agreements, requirements for new power pole locations and who's responsible for those. A discussion about how this Noonstar will have to reconnect to the new infrastructure and the need for interim sewage servicing if the downstream sewage upgrades are not completed at the time of the building opening up. All of this will be included in a development agreement with Noonstar. Going through the plans on attachment 3, I can show you some of the pedestrian improvements and how they would improve walkability in this site. So the site plan has a yellow building in the middle of it, and the darker gray surface with little white circles inside, those are pedestrian walkways that are being introduced. So you can see that there would be a pedestrian connection from the pharmacy coming south and then a crosswalk to the hotel. There would be a new trail introduced with a barricade to protect pedestrians. This would be south of the existing ring road that wraps around to connect to the post office. There would also be some pedestrian walkways or walkway improvements north of the hotel going north towards the bridge. Overall, these are great improvements because the walkability on site now is mixed with regular vehicle traffic. So there are pedestrians sometimes having to walk on roadways and or drive aisles or in parking lots, and this would create designated safe spaces for people to walk from A to B or to use the Astro Hill as a shortcut to get to the school, for instance. With the amount of residents that are currently in the Astro Hill and then proposed later on in future growth, these are great improvements. The rest of the plans are there, which just shows mostly the floor plans and how the hotel suites are to be designed. And renderings of the building are also provided in the attachment, and it helps give you a sense of where this is being developed. At the very end of the package, or of this item in the package, there is a master plan that shows their overall future development plans as well as their existing. So you can see the hotel in the middle of all of it, just to give council some additional context. From a general plan perspective, the proposal is supportive. General plan encourages infill and densification within the core area, and this is an opportunity for both of those. The subdivision does create a landlocked parcel, and this is why the survey sketch plan includes the easement within there. However, due to the uniqueness of the Astro Hill, it is a supportable exception to the general plan, in which normally prevents landlocked parcels. The development complies with all zoning requirements, including parking, height, setbacks, and the uses that are being proposed. And as discussed, the rear yard setback variance is the only non-complying aspect, but that is of building 359 and 358, not so much the hotel. So the recommendation from staff is that council approve development permit DP 24056 for plan 617 lot 422 to permit the development of a hotel, subject to the special conditions, the city's standard conditions, and in accordance with the plans referenced in section 2. To approve survey sketch SK 25002 and to approve a variance to section 11.7 of Echlewit zoning bylaw number 899 to reduce the required rear yard setback for building 358 and 359 of lot B to 2 meters. Thank you. If there's any questions for myself or for Nuna Star, we're both here. Thank you.
Thank you, Matthew. Questions common, Councilor Shepherd.
Sorry about that. Thank you, Mayor. Generally supportive. My only question is just in relation to access to the post office without having to drive around the 8-story. Was there any thought given to preserving and ensuring that preservation of access to the post office, you know, via the new easement between the post office itself and the new hotel? You know, the addition of those parking spots is going to make it a little bit less convenient than it is now, I would say, but I was wondering if there was any thought given or if it might be appropriate to extend the easement or add additional easement to ensure that that access to the post office through that side could be maintained.
Thank you, Councilor Shepherd. Matthew?
Thank you, Mayor Awa, and thank you, Councillor Shepherd, for the question. It's a great question. We did consider that. Actually, there are so many lots in this complex, little ones, triangle slivers, big lots. It's really a conglomerate of different lots. So the lands administrator and I did a deep dive into all of the lots and all of the instruments. So that includes easements and everything else. There are, if you look at this survey sketch, I'm assuming you're probably there, there's faint red lines that are underneath everything. Those are existing easements. So there is an existing easement that runs through lot A, and that will be reapplied in through the survey sketch. And so there will be continued access to the lot in question for the post office. And then another easement is being registered from the other side, from the Brown building to the 8th story. So that's also in the works. So there would be continued access through the ring road.
Thank you, Matthew. I got your answer. Okay, Councilor Shepherd.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. that's good to hear. I'm in support of that, and that makes a lot of sense. You know, would it make sense, you know, with the easement being under the majority of the lot, without defining that in any way, might it be appropriate to add a special condition on ensuring that that access is maintained? Like, is there any way of formalizing that continued access to the post office area through what is a rather large easement to this point?
Thank you, Councilor Shepherd. Matthew?
Yes, thank you for the question. We could, that is something that staff would ensure is facilitated as part of the sketch plan. We would, if we were aiming to remove any instruments, we would actually mark that on the sketch plan. So we would show it as lines being removed. In this case, we're opting not to remove the easement. So it's formalized in that sense. That said, the plan, the condition is already there. And doesn't point to the exact easement, so we could, if just for security purposes, council could add to the motion that the post office continued access through this lot to the post office be applied. That is also an option, just for extra measure and comfort.
Thank you, Matthew. Deputy Mayor Clarity.
Pardon me, Mayor Alba. I have a couple of questions. Again, I'm in favor of the project, but I had a little bit of reservation when I was reading the transportation section. As I said before, in our planning process, when they were applying for permit at the time for the complex apartment building in the far north of the building, the Brown building, the concern I had raised before was the access roads for emergency and so forth. And again, we're adding additional traffic into this area, and I was pretty I would like to see the traffic impact study in order for you to, like, a couple of eyeballers I got was for building an 84 accommodation facility, and you are just adding a 20 vehicle trips on high peak, during the high peak hours. I find that quite interesting. Another note I noticed that no major modification to the roadway infrastructure is required. Just wondering if these transportation engineer for the developer is qualified to provide this opinion, or should that be coming from the city? And another one I had concern was the variance from 8 meters to 2 meters. It was mentioned that the property is unique. I don't know what you mean by unique, because everything around Inui Nunanga or property is all unique. So I'm not quite comfortable putting a resolution motion with number 3, approval of variance to section 117 of city zone bylaw number 899, to be used to require requiring the rear Your easement setback of building 359 to lot B to 2 centimeters. For my, based on my experience and knowledge, I think more information would be required on that. How they come to do a conclusion that would say it's fine. And I'll know another concern is challenges you that identify the infrastructure for water and sewer. And the process is upgraded right now as we speak as a part of the major capital planning. I do have reservations on that too at the timing of this project because there are a number of projects in that particular area that are being proposed, including the one I said just mentioned about the apartment building in the far corner in the north side. So I just have reservation on that. How you had mentioned that discussion with the engineering group has been ongoing. So there are some certain things that are not yet finalized, and I think those need to be identified.
Thank you, Councillor Loughlin, Deputy Mayor Flaherty.
Thank you, Mayor Ava, and thank you, Deputy Mayor Flaherty. Great questions and great analysis. The transportation study was completed by a qualified engineer with a stamp. The city's engineering department did have a chance to review that, and they did approve the recommendations of the private engineer that was hired by Nunastar. With regard to emergency vehicle access, we did look at every option. The one option that was possible was opening up the secondary access at the south of the lot. And we did work out a situation where that would be opened up for the city to hold the key to that gate, despite it being on private property, or most of the access being through private property. So that's something that hopefully can address emergency situations where if people are stuck, we can open that up for them and clear the way. For parking, we simply apply the parking demand calculations that are in the zoning bylaw. So if there's a ratio that we apply and use to calculate how many parking stalls are needed for different uses. In the case of every hotel, we apply the standard parking ratio and any additional needs based on business space or commercial space in the proposal. The results of our calculation use just the zoning bylaw, and the parking that's being proposed is enough. But because the Astro Hill is so mixed, there's different uses, we actually took all of their different uses, the cinema, the post office, the pharmacy, calculated all of their parking demand on this side of the Astro Hill, and then counted every proposed stall in their master plan that's being proposed as part of this project, and they did have enough parking for all of their uses. So that was something that we had analyzed for parking as well, just to be extra sure. I think the timing was something that we explained to them. It's an inconvenient timing based on where we're at with the Astro Hill design project for the water and sewer. And we ensured that it was clear that it would be the responsibility of the developer. So that's a risk that Nunastar has chosen to take, the engineering department is supportive of that interim solution until the design is complete. They may be able to, Scott behind me may be able to, if council wishes, he may be able to explain why the timing is being proposed and or why they're coming now to develop this. Thank you.
Matthew,
Councillor Stevenson. I have a
few questions and comments, I guess. Number one, the walkways that you described, I'm happy that there'll be walkways between the buildings. I think that's a very important design feature. I'm wondering what method of delineating those spaces is going to be used, and what method / responsibility for snow clearing of those trails throughout the winter. Question number two, the lookout that alternate Deputy Mayor Flaherty was referring to, the other building up at the north end, what's the schedule for when it's going to be constructed? Number three, if you look on the master plan inset that you provided, and on the old one that I have from 2022, it shows cars running from the bridge to Queen Elizabeth Way, by Ventures or by the Astro Hill Gate, I think is what they call it there. So it shows vehicles running the entire length of that path. I'm wondering why we don't just open that up now. What's to stop that from becoming a throwaway at this point instead of later when the entire development's done? I'm still a little confused on the survey sketch about the access easement and where that is. I think you explained it at the start, but I was having trouble situating the building in my head at that point, so I couldn't do that easement either. But is that right in front of the pharmacy, or as my granddaughter just called it, the smoothie store? Is that right in front there on the existing road and then just continuing in? That's a question. In terms of your answer to alternate Deputy Mayor Flaherty about the traffic study, it made it sound like he couldn't see it if he wanted to. Is that what you're saying, that we couldn't see the traffic study? And then you've twice referred to the gate that would allow for emergency, and I'm confused, and maybe you can help me on the survey sketch as to where that gate is with the lock so that the snow clearers can get in. And then I guess just finally to his comment about parking and the questions about parking. Me and parking, but I know that whenever I go to Astro Hill now, before there's a hotel or a new apartment building, there's no parking, and I would pull a Councillor Kunuk here and admit that I park in the loading zone quite regularly, because there's no other spots, not just in the places you're supposed to park, but all the way to Inupiaq High School, they get filled. So I find it hard to believe that there'll be adequate parking. I guess that's all for me for now.
Thank you, Mayor Alba, and thank you, Councillor Stevenson, for the question. I'll start with question one about delineation. I'll just go in order. Delineation of trails. So it depends on where we're talking about, but parking rails are used to delineate the trails that are closer to the smoothie store. And there would be a guardrail along the south side below the post office building. So there's a trail that's going along the ring road. There would be a guardrail there. Then there's, in terms of the trails that are kind of through the it's kind of a mix of blast rock and tundra, kind of south of the ring road. Those would, there are no interface with vehicles, so there's no delineation there. And then there would be, again, parking rails for the connections north of the building as well, that kind of separate them. In terms of surface materials, I believe it would be granular, so there would be no raised curb concrete in this situation. And question two was about snow clearing. This was a discussion when Astro Hill Lookout was approved and introduced trails in that permit as well. This might be a better question for Scott, because these are private lands, so we haven't gotten too far into the maintenance of trails and snow. But during that original conversation, it was understood that Nunastar would be responsible and very active to clearing snow in their various transportation links, including pedestrian infrastructure. Question three was about the timeline of Lookout. We understand that the civil works for Astral Hill Lookout, which is the site north of the hotel, have been completed, the grading, and then they're piling this year, and I believe that's like they're starting like right away kind of thing. This year they'll start construction for with the foundation and continue on from there. For the master plan question, it is an artistic rendering, and it shows vehicles there. Scott might be able to speak better to the intention of whether or not they'd like to open that up long term. In the interim, this, what we call the L-shaped lot, which is the one that kind of, it comes in from the north and then goes left under that white and green building. That's Municipal Road and is currently being targeted by the design team for the water and sewer redesign. So the infrastructure might come down through the top part of that lot and run along the creek all the way down, or it might do something else. But we'd like to understand what that full plan looks like before we open up that as a public roadway. So keeping it closed for now in the interim is supportable, but waiting until we have the rest of the infrastructure planned out is generally the direction on that one. For question five about the easement location, it is the new easement that's being proposed because there currently is no easement to get to the lot. Legally, it's a private drive aisle right now, but technically right now the lot is accessed from Palauga Drive. So by splitting it, the lot A would no longer have access, if that makes sense. So if the existing lot where 358 and 359 are, if you look just below 358, you can see it touches Palauga Drive, and that's how those lots are accessed publicly. So by splitting it, the top portion would need legal access. So the easement is shown in red dotted lines. It's an outline that, again, you were correct about the location with the pharmacy. The discussion after that with Councillor Shepherd was about the existing easements and pertaining access to the post office, and that would also be true. In terms of whether the traffic impact study can be seen by council, it can. We've uploaded it online at plan.echaluit.ca. We could bring it, because it's such a big document, 60 plus pages, it's difficult to translate and include it in the agenda package, but we could have that reviewed. But it is, there's no restrictions in who can see it. And then for parking, it is the use case, or sorry, the calculations for hotels, we did reanalyze them last summer. So we had parking consultants come up and do demand surveys for both of our hotels. And then further, Nunastar did their own private assessment of their Frobisher Inn. And the parking rates that the zoning bylaw currently provides for is actually, we're actually experiencing less demand than we have supply of parking for hotels. And that's likely because both of our hotels have restaurants and other spaces mixed into them, like conference rooms, that aren't normally being used. But generally, our parking rate for hotels is supportable, and the parking consultants did not make any policy change recommendations for hotel parking. They did have some advice for other uses, which we're incorporating into our new general plan and zoning bylaw. Thank you for your questions.
We're in the Matthew. No more on Gibber Mary Smith.
Just a quick comment on the parking. Hopefully by the time this is built, we have an effective shuttle service in town that might reduce some of the need for vehicles. So, thanks.
We're going to make Gibber Mary Smith. I need a motion. Moved by Councilor Shepherd, seconded by Mayor Smith. Any comments on the motion to approve development permit, survey skits and then variance? No comments. All in favor? Unanimous. Thank you. Motion carried. Moving on to agenda selection of street name for recovery center. It's going to be Maya Tworden. You have separate paper on your agenda. Go ahead, Maya.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Council. My name is Maya Tworden. I am the city's planning and development clerk. The Nunavut Recovery Center, Akusaoqeaq, which means a trail you go through to reach your destination, is currently being constructed along with a new road that will provide access. In keeping with and recognizing the importance of sustaining the Inuktitut language, every attempt must be made to incorporate Inuktitut into the acceptance of new street names. In 2024, City Council had proposed two name suggestions for the community. However, many Akalumiut submitted street name alternatives during the online vote, and the top three names were presented by the city's planning and development department at the elders' kamak for discussion. While the elders were given the choice of selecting one of the three names, the elders were interested in coming up with additional unique and symbolic street names. Their desire to contribute a symbolic name shows a deep sense of ownership and care for the community. Following a few group discussions, which elders shared their opinions and thoughts between one another, the group ultimately came up with Akhaosikevik Road, which is similar in meaning to the recovery center's name, Akuzeareak. By selecting a name that resonates with the center's purpose, it strengthens a sense of unity and intention behind both the road and the recovery center. Akhaosikevik Road, which translates to feel better road, is a wonderful symbolic name for the healing process that Akuzeareak is intended to facilitate. The name Akhaosikevik Road connects to the mission of the Recovery Center, aligning with the goal of helping individuals heal and break the cycle of addiction. It symbolizes hope, healing, and the journey towards recovery. The decision to have an Inuktitut street name is a clear demonstration of the city's commitment to preserving and promoting Inuktitut, particularly in spaces that will be a positive healing space for Nunavummiut. It shows that the community values not only the practical use of the language, but also its connection to the land, the people, and the healing journey. The elders' input clearly reflects deep wisdom and a thoughtful approach, making it even more significant for the street name Akhaosikevik Road. Thank you.
Councilor Shepherd.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think this is your first time presenting to us, Mayor. You did an excellent job. Thank you and welcome. I would be fully in support of the recommendation. Possibly to take any future road naming options directly to the Elders' Kamak in future. Let's let them make recommendations on all future roads before it even comes to council. I think that would be a simpler process and a good way of involving elders in our community. So, you know, that being said, I would move to make the recommendation as presented.
Thank you. Before that, then Councilor Deputy Mayor Smith.
Thank you, Mayor Awa. I am happy to second Councilor Shepherd's motion. I think this is a wonderful name, and I think including our elders and naming roads in the future is a great idea. I know that we did do a poll, and I know that the winning option on the poll was Streety McStreetface, which is very silly. And this is kind of off topic for this, but one thing I will always support is the right to be silly, and it would never be for this road, but I would love if one day we found a back street somewhere that really didn't matter that we could name Streety McStreetface, but happy to support this tonight.
When Deputy Mayor Smith, if there's no more questions, comments, all in favor? Unanimous, four? Opposed? I think this may have been.
Yeah.
Okay, Mr. Shelley, opposed. Thank you. Motion carried. Okay. Request for decision, Federation of Canadian Municipalities Annual Conference. That's going to be actual dates of events will be from May 29th to June 1, probably up to June 2. We need a couple of councillors to attend. If there's any interest for this event, it's open. Councillor Deputy Mayor Smith.
Mayor, I think this is a wonderful event. I do think we should definitely participate. I myself will be unavailable to go, so I hope that some of my colleagues here can go and get some value out of this event. So.
Councilor Shippard.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm just echoing Deputy Mayor's comments, it is a very beneficial conference. Having been able to go twice previously, it's very, very rewarding, and it helps you be better at this job. I'm just wondering, you know, is there the ability for any staff to go? I know municipalities across Canada do send directors of different departments, whether that's recreation, public works, other members of administration. And is there a reason why we limit this to just two councillors? Realizing the value that comes from this, it would be nice if it was open to anybody who wanted to attend from council. I know there's costs involved, but they're, especially with it being in Ottawa, it's not as significant as it would be in some other far-flung parts of the country. I know myself, I would very much like to attend one more time, and I would like my colleagues to attend as well. It's not like we have a hard and fast policy limiting who can go. It's always proposed that two go, but I've advocated in the past for more people to attend if they can. I'm just wondering if there was any thought put towards that.
Thank you, Councillor Shepherd. CAO, Steve.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, Councillor, for your comments. Council, of course, can administer their budget as they see fit. To answer your last question, your comment on the administration attending, there is another professional development organization called CAMA, the Canadian Administration of Municipal Administrators, that we're going to be sending a couple of folks to this year. So FCM is more the political side of governance, and CAMA the administrative side. So that's what we're going to focus on for this year. Thank you.
We're going to meet CEO Steve, Alternate Deputy Mayor Larry.
Mayor Alba. As my colleague has said, is being a new councillor is a learning curve. And if my time permits, I would like to participate. And especially when we were starting to work towards infrastructure capital planning, I think it would be good to get some more insight of how the other municipality work within. So, thank you.
We're going to make the Deputy Mayor. Is that you, Marie? Okay. Can you look? Councilor Stevenson.
Wait a minute, Tavota. I would support both of those two people who have said they'd be interested in going. I'd also be an alternate if they couldn't go for something.
When I meet Councilor Stevenson, tell him all my.
I can be an alternate.
I think I asked Councilor Akloka. I think she mentioned yes to go down if he will. She will. Okay. So we got Akloka and Flaherty. And Shepherd and Kuhn. Okay. Do you need a motion to approve these members? Need a motion to Deputy Mayor Smith, seconded by alternate Deputy Mayor Flaherty. Comments and questions? Being none, all in favor? Unanimous, thank you. Okay, 9F, decision item billing and collection policy. We have Peter, Senior Administrator, Senior Executive Director. Peter.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. This is not for decision, but for discussion. So what I'd like to be able to do tonight is sort of give you an update on where we're at with developing a billing collections policy and looking for some input from councillors and on the direction that we're going in, if we're going in the correct direction or not, and if there are any glaring issues with the policy as we've developed it to date, and if there are things that we've missed or suggestions on improvement. So I can quickly sort of go over it and sort of highlight some of the things that we've looked at. And then open it to the floor for questions, comments, and discussion. So this, we haven't quite decided if this could be an administrative policy or a bylaw. It could be both. It could be a bylaw that sets it up, much like the property tax exemption policy, which was enacted under a bylaw. So you know, that's completely open at this point. We wanted to incorporate some principles into the collections bylaw to make it clear that while we recognize that the city has responsibility to be paid for services and collect funds and things of that nature, that we were willing to work with the people that owe us money. And it's not, and we also be sensitive and recognize some of the economic situations that these people are in. So we wanted to make it clear that there's a willingness inside the city to work with clients and people that owe us the money so that we can come to arrangements that will satisfy those outstanding amounts and try not to create too much of a financial hardship necessarily on them so that at the end of the day we get the debts paid off, but they're able to work it through so that it's something that's a little bit more manageable for them. So we wanted to sort of make that explicit at the start of the policy, because that's what we want to do. Now, if you're not willing to work with us, excuse me, then, all bets are off and we will, prosecute and take action. But the first step is always to work with citizens to come to some way to make sure that we can satisfy these obligations. We have a section on scope.
we try to limit what this policy might apply to. It's mostly for monies and obligations that are generated from city activities. So things like the provision of services, property taxes, invoicing that we do to the public. But it doesn't necessarily apply to arrangements we have for contribution agreements or funding agreements and things like that. So even though they're considered receivables and money owed to the city, we didn't necessarily figure we'd, threat collection agencies to go after the government of Nunavut if they were slow paying as a contribution payment. So we tried to keep those separate. Then we tried to sort of understand how the responsibility flows. So the way we understand it right now, council will approve the policy, the CAO would be responsible for implementing the policy. Myself would be responsible for the administration, making sure that the procedures and the collection of funds are happening and clear, and then the staff in the corporate services department and in the various departments that are involved in billing have roles and responsibilities under this policy as well, and we're trying to make that clear as a bit of a trickle-down, but also to show that everyone is involved in this process. We also wanted to recognize some of the constraints and the legislation that we have to deal with. Obviously the Cities, Towns and Villages Act and Property Assessment Tax Act, but things like the limitations of actions. So when things are statute barred, that we have to recognize and be aware that if we're not taking collection action for a certain period of time, then we would be barred by law from actually continuing collection activities or even trying to start. So there are some things that in that framework we have to be aware of. As well, there are certain rules and responsibilities for things like employee deductions. So some things are governed by labor standards codes, some things are governed by the collective bargaining agreement, and there's processes that we have to be sensitive to and make sure that our procedures follow those best practices. So we've tried to incorporate that as well. Getting into the actual billing and invoicing, we bill in several different ways for property taxes. We send out our billings twice a year, and they're split into four payments with utilities and so for water and sewer and for garbage collection. We do that every month. Ambulance services sort of as the obligations are incurred, and then we try to bill those on a monthly basis. And so for other things that are like most recently, we had invoices for fire suppression, and these things are sort of done as an ad hoc kind of approach. But when we do them, we are trying to make sure that we do it on a regular cycle. So we have a few different payment terms that we have to deal with. The standard term, obviously, is we try to collect things every 30 days. If we invoice something, we expect to be paid in 30 days. But utility bills are 45 days. The property taxes are based on an installation or an installment plan, so the dates are set and they're known in advance. And then one thing perhaps to have discussion about is, we don't have a discount for early payment. In some commercial businesses, you'd see the terms like 2, 10, net 30. So if you pay within 10 days, you get a 2% discount, which can incentivize early payment if you're considering cash flow issues. We don't have it in here, but we do make a note that we don't have it, so it's a possibility for discussion if that's of interest. Repayment plans. So, as we laid out in the principles, we do want to make it clear that we will entertain repayment plans. If a bill is due, we can look at doing monthly payments, and we would be flexible on the waiving of penalties and interest, and we'll get to interest in a bit. Now, the concern would be is, if someone agrees to a payment plan and then doesn't stick to it, then, you know, we sort of have to treat them as, you know, someone who, you know, is not cooperating, and then we would probably have to look at putting penalties and interest back in place. But for those that, you know, are living up to their agreements and, you know, negotiate a payment plan, then we could certainly cut them some a bit of a break and you know, allow them to carry on. It's just that if you know, if they break it, you know, then we're not likely to extend that to them in the future. When we talk about late payments, penalties, and interest, I know that there is a desire to move towards a simpler way of you know, issuing penalties and interest on a simple basis as opposed to a compound basis. We recognize that the compound interest at some point can be a useful tool to incentivize people to pay, but after a certain point it just becomes an exercise in accounting, and it's not it does not do what you'd hope it to do. So we are looking at a couple of different options. We have the right to charge interest. It doesn't have to be compound interest. So we can certainly state that we do a simple interest process. We can also look at doing sort of some flat penalty fees instead of interest. There's no requirement that says we must charge interest. It's usually we may charge interest in outstanding balances, and that's typically been the go-to. We do have the ability to issue penalties, so there's a small table in Section 11 that looks at, you know, depending on the size of the bill that's outstanding, there may be a tiered penalty system that we might be able to implement. We're currently looking at whether something like that can be programmed into our computer system. We believe that we might be able to translate it into simple interest, which is similar. So we are looking into how flexible the computer systems are to get that done, and then if it can't be done simply, we have access to some very bright kids down in the University of Waterloo that might be able to magic up a solution for us as well. So there are, we're exploring some of those options, but we are interested in looking at alternative ways of charging for overdue accounts that don't necessarily get out of control with geometric you know, interest and compounding. Then we, in Section 13, so collection tools and processes. So this is where we have lots of ideas on the set standard things that you can do to remind people that they owe money and to send them demand letters and phone calls, and then how to escalate that to whether it's outside collection agencies or legal action. You know, the city, and you know, we have the absolute right to set off amounts. So if somebody owes us money and we have a payment to send to them, we can certainly deduct what they owe us from what we're going to pay them. So that's the right of set off, and we can certainly look at implementing things like that. Payroll deductions, there are specific rules around how that's done. So if you know, in a lot of cases, there has to be not compliance, but the employee has to agree to have deductions taken off as a way to repay if they have an outstanding bill with the city. There's also the potential to withhold or reduce services. In many instances, like for business licenses and development permits, if you owe money to the city, you know, they don't issue it. We can look at other options to, you know, see if there's things that we could withhold or put in abeyance while the funds are, you know, while there's outstanding bills that need to be cleaned up, such as, say, property tax exemptions or rebates or refunds and things of that nature. under another tool that we use is, and one of this is mandated under legislation, is the annual publication of people who have property tax arrears. Right now, that's only being used for property taxes. It's possible that we could look at a method whereby if someone is owing a fair bit of money on a utility bill that's outstanding for a long period of time, that may also be a consideration that we could, on an annual basis, publish names of people that owe us money for other things, not just property taxes. And so there are some thoughts around that. At the end of the day, where our ability to collect funds and to implement some of the more confrontational kinds of approaches will be based on the appetite of the city to actually collect money if it comes down to the line where someone owes money and they absolutely refuse to pay. You go so far, and then at what point do you have to stop? And I think this is a concern. You can't evict them. You can't cut off their water and sewer. I mean, there are limitations to what we're able and willing to do. And so at some point, there will be, I think, a balance struck between collections and accounts receivable. And I'm not sure where that balance is going to be. I mean, currently we have one, and if we're going to move in a certain direction, then that's fair. We just need to have a better sense on how far do we go. So some kind of framework or guidance around that would be helpful as well. We are also able, like under the Property Tax Act, if people owe, let's say, utility bills that are related to real property, if they're outstanding at the end of the year, there is a section that allows us to transfer that to the property tax, to the actual property as a special lien. So whenever properties are transferred, we usually collect all of the outstanding amounts, and that is sort of the last piece where when someone finally sells, the property gets transferred from a family member to somebody else, all the outstanding bills have to be cleared up before the title is cleared and there's a certificate issued. And so that is our end game. We are always able to do that. It's just where do we draw the line prior to that? So so that's sort of where we are with drafting the policy. Those are some of the issues that we've been discussing. And I'd like to turn it now over to the floor and hear your commentary and thoughts on how we can make this a workable policy. Thank you.
Well, meet Peter, Councilor Shepherd.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, Peter. A lot of work's gone into this so far, and there's definitely some more required to get to where I would be happy with it, but it's a good start. If we're going to make the change to get away from compound interest to a different structure, whether it's simple interest or non-compounding at all, as proposed here, I think we really need to firm up the collection side of this. And I think as council, we owe it to administration to give them the tools and the structure to be able to manage that side. There's nothing, there's no tools in this as it is presented today on the collection side, just some options. I am a proponent of including any utility amounts owing at the end of the year into property taxes. We've had discussions previously, looking at ways that we could, in the case of tenants that are paying utilities, coming up with a way for permission to be obtained to share tenant account information with property owners so that the property owners are aware that amounts owing are going to be added to their property taxes at the end of the year. Whether it's, we could pick the time frame. Anything that's 6 months overdue automatically gets
added to property tax at December 31st each year. Further to that, you know, we should always work with our residents and create payment plans and make things as flexible as possible. When those payment plans don't work out, we need the tools to be able to move forward the way other municipalities do. And I, again, would advocate for going to the courts when property taxes are not paid. If your name appears, you know, if you're late and you get published in the paper, you shouldn't get published a second time. If it's still owing come the end of the next year, the court process should be started. Yellowknife has a similar policy. You know, they don't deal with arrears because if you're 12 months behind, you either pay or they go to court. And I think that that is the incentive for people to keep their accounts current or to work with the city on that payment plan. So for me, I would like to see a way for tenant account information to be shared with property owners so that property owners are aware that those unpaid amounts from their tenants are going to be added to property tax. I don't think it's necessary for all utility accounts to be in the name of the property owner. I think tenants have the right to have those accounts, but we retain the right to roll those amounts up into property taxes. And I think by policy, if, you know, come 12 months after the publication of the arrears list, if property taxes remain in arrears, we should start the court process. And that should be widely publicized, and everybody should know what that process is. The intent is never to repossess a house. The intent is to encourage repayment and to not get in the situation we have right now with historic arrears that have grown to such catastrophic and unpayable amounts. I kind of leave it at that for now. However we want to do the interest, we can make it whatever we want. I don't really care, because we should have the collections measures in place that the interest that we charge is ultimately irrelevant.
Thank you, Councillor Shepherd.
Anybody else?
Thank you, Mayor.
All I want to just... I just want to agree with what Councillor Shepherd said. I think one thing that has happened to us in the past is we've created unpayable debts for people, you know, and I think that's something that we can't have that happening again. You know, it's a ridiculous situation for us to be in, for our residents to be in. Ideally, you know, no one gets in debt to the city, but it's going to happen, and we need a way to make it reasonable for every party involved, so I agree with some of Councillor Shepherd's recommendations.
I agree with the Councillor Shepherd, but I know that some of them might be very difficult to collect because of compound interest, and that they go up really high. I just want to mention something about water and sewer billing and paying. You guys probably bill us by electronically, by email, because by the time we got the mail and bill for water, sewer, garbage, whatever, tried to pay it almost right away. Seems to be always late. Either the invoicing is slow or the electronic payment that we pay is slow. I don't know, but if we can get the invoice earlier by electronically, maybe we could keep it up, because even the ones that we paid, it still show up sometimes in the second invoice. Thank you.
Wait a minute. Okay, Mr. Mayor Flaherty.
Mayor,
Mayor Flaherty,
just a comment. I guess being new to this is this potential policy has been reviewed for quite some time now by the solicitor, and I agree with my colleagues that we need to move forward. sooner the better. My only comment is that make sure that administratively finance and others are in place to able to do their job. For example, as of today, we're still receiving our bills in P.O. Box, not on the street names. So hopefully that one of the things that will be straightened out, as 2 months later, finally receive something in the mail. So in general, just in support of this draft policy, hopefully that at the end of the day will be provide the input from my legal counsel to ensure that within the bylaws and the regulations that those are all legal, and just ensure that administratively the support staff are in place to proceed with this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would see a new policy coming into force on kind of a go-forward basis. It doesn't really affect any of the historical stuff we have. We'd almost have to have a hard and fast date. January 1st, 2026, the new policy comes into place, have it in full effect going forward. At the same time, it would be nice to start with as clean of a slate as possible. I know we've been talking for the entire time I've been on council, 7+ years, whatever it might be, of dealing with some of the historic debts, some of the debts that is uncollectible either practically or legally at this point in time. You've done a debt forgiveness bylaw, we've dealt with some of that, but it'd be nice to kind of clean up what remains, determine, and I know this work is ongoing and it's been underway for quite some time. It would be nice to wrap that up, find out what is collectible. Let's collect it however we can and kind of clean this slate to get rid of that historic debt and kind of move forward with a good new collections policy that will prevent that from happening again.
When me, Councillor Shepherd, Peter, you want to add more?
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. Thank you for the commentary. That's very helpful. I can add a couple of things. So for Councillor Koenig, yes, you do have the option to have electronic billing for much of what we do, especially for utilities and property taxes. We do need to work on making sure that we're consistent in the billing cycle. Especially for utilities, because it's a manual process to get the reads done. Scheduling and capacity sometimes impact the ability to get the bills out on a regular basis. But that, I think, is why you have the 45 days from the day of the invoice to pay it rather than just the 30 days, so that there's a bit of a built-in cushion there. But fair enough. When you make the payment, seeing it on the profile can be disconcerting because you know you've paid it and it's still listed there. So we will try to address some of those concerns. And what Councilor Flory said as well is true, or sorry, also Deputy Mayor, that the addresses with the property tax, especially the issues with getting those updated and the databases are being updated. They are also available electronically as well. So unfortunately, they mostly, hopefully don't have too many that have P.O. Box still on them, but they can be delivered through electronic means now that there are ways. And I think more recently, we saw the Lands Department did put out a PSA today where you could get an electronic version of your property tax assessment through a nifty little QR code. So, we are making movements towards being more modern. It did work, and I got mine in the mail within an hour of asking for it, so I thought that was working pretty well. The cleanup is the elephant in the room, and that's fair. The ability to be honest, I think half the time when we're doing compound interest in some of these larger accounts, the interest is, you know, we claim it as revenue, but then we write it off almost immediately in the AFDA, so, or sorry, allowance for doubtful accounts. So, you know, it, that's what I mean by more of an accounting exercise. It's not really helpful. There may be opportunities as we review some of those larger ones of ways that, okay, if we reset it back to, you know, what the original debt was, and we wipe out, you know, say, something, like,
whittle it down to something that is reasonably collectible. In some cases, that may be possible. In some cases, that may not be, depending on the situation. You know, there are options, but as you're right, we would have to do, especially in the case of property taxes, you know, a specific bylaw, which then would require the minister's approval. So, you know, there are extra steps to do that. For some of the other things where we're charging interest and it's not property tax related, we might have the flexibility to administratively deal with that, but again, we would have to make sure that we're following all the rules. And allowing for some kind of reset and cleanup of the accounts receivable to make them all subject to the new collection rules might be a way to integrate those two concerns. One is how to collect it, and one is how to get something that's collectible. So where we have a lot of accounts that are uncollectible, is there a way for us to turn them into something that's collectible and something that the, you know, the people that know that would then be able to and willing to help satisfy. So at least we can present that as an option. So I appreciate that very much. Thank you. Yes, we'll definitely make sure that our legal beagles will have a good look at this to make sure that we're not overstepping. That's why I did try to include as much of the legal framework and an understanding of what the processes are for doing things like set-offs and employee deductions. But certainly moving forward with you're on the list once and then, you know, you're on the court list, that might be an interesting approach, and certainly we can look at how we would implement something like that and the process for addressing it in the court system. We could certainly add that to the toolbox. I don't think I have any serious concerns about that. This is good feedback, and I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Peter, Councilor Shepherd.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, Peter. And you just reminded me of my one other thing that I noticed in here, and that's just as it relates to the employees of the City of Aquilamine in particular. A little bit uncomfortable differentiating between employees and non-employees there. I'm just wondering, while we might have the right to directly garnish the pay of employees for amounts owed to the city, I'm a little bit hesitant to go down that road and treat our employees differently than we treat everybody else in the city, particularly until we get some firm collection policies in place. I don't know, something just doesn't sit right with me.
Go ahead and make over Shepherd here.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So in response to that, Councilor Shepherd, that's a fair assessment. We wouldn't want to be treating anyone differently just because they were not an employee. I think that for employees to do deductions, I think I might have mentioned that earlier, is that we do require their consent to do that, so that, again, we would be negotiating a repayment plan that could either be satisfied by them paying it, monthly or whatever, or for simplicity, having it deducted from their pay. But like I say, there are very specific rules on how that works, and so we have included it in there to make sure that, you know, we are aware of, you know, we can't go too far, we can't just take the money out or anything like that. So we would treat with that fairly and equitably.
Okay, I think we're had much information. I like this idea. We're moving forward.
especially we're looking at the removing the compound interest. Thank you, Peter. Moving on to the last item, discussing item, draft terms of reference for governance and priority committee. Steve.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and good evening again to Council. This item has been discussed a few times now in workshops and coming back to Council. So just as a quick summary, in your last meeting, you did provide a motion of support to form the Governance and Priorities Committee. So a question was asked during the last meeting, could we bring in a terms of reference? So we didn't bring in a formal terms of reference. We brought it in this evening as a discussion item to get your feedback. So once we got feedback, we can formalize it and then bring it forward for Council approval at the future meeting. So with that, I'll turn it over for Council's discussion. I'm assuming everybody's had a chance to review the documents in the package. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, Steve. I like it, the way it's presented. It just kind of formalizes the committee's role as an advisory body and just, you know, blatantly lays out the lack of actual decision-making power. You know, everything that goes through that committee still has to come through full council before any decisions can be made. So, but it also provides enough flexibility for that committee to do the work that is expected of it. So I'm in favor of terms of reference as presented.
Thank you, Mayor Allen. I'd like to agree with my colleague here. And pardon me, Steve, is the idea that we'd come back with a formalized terms of reference to full council, and then we would go on to select members, or is that something we want to do this evening?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you, Deputy Mayor. So if Council is in agreement, what they could do tonight is pick the chair and the committee members, and then this terms of reference would travel back to that initial committee meeting, and they would make recommendations to bring it back one more time to Council. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm wondering if we should wait for some more of our colleagues to return before we make that actual decision, just to give everybody an option to express their interest in participating and to have a say in the makeup of that committee.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, Councillor. Just for clarity, so we'll put it back on the next council meeting agenda as an RFD, just for picking the four members and a chair. Is that okay? Okay. Thank you.
Motion moved by Deputy Mayor Smith, seconded by Councillor Shepherd. Comments and questions to the motion? Being none, all in favor? Unanimous, thank you. And no in-camera item, adjournment. The motions moved by Deputy Mayor Smith, seconded by Councillor Shepherd. Question? All in favor? Motion carried. Meeting adjourned. Thank you. Thank you, Prasadji. I'm joined by DTF. Thank you, guests. And have a good evening.